From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carol Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. We have a great show for you today. Craig Finn of the fabulous band The Hold Steady will be joining us later to play Not My Job. We're excited about that. But first, this week, our friends at NPR News applied to get Helen Thomas's old front row seat. This is true. In the White House briefing room, they sent a letter making their case, and we wanted to do what we could to help. So listen up, White House. Here are three reasons why NPR should have Helen Thomas's seat. First, for starters, everyone in public radio smells like an old person, so there'll be no noticeable change. Every new incoming president gets a weekend edition lapel pin and a book of Will Short's Sudoku puzzles. Okay, and you're like, okay, that's good, but what else you got? All right. How does this sound, White House?
Hello, I'm Carl Castle. You've reached the White House. We're busy tearing down the free market, so please leave a message.
There you go. Just saying. Anyway, we hope our friends at NPR News enjoy their new seat. And in the meantime, you've got a front row seat for our show wherever you are because you're listening on the radio. Give us a call, 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hey, Peter. It's Brian from Simi Valley, California. How
hey,
you doing?
Hey, how are things in Simi Valley? Are they, in fact, Simi?
Truly.
Yeah, it's a Simi place. What do you do there?
I teach classes on leadership skills.
All right. I've got about 15 seconds. What can you teach me about being a leader? Quick tip.
Communicate more gooder.
There you go. Wow. That'll help.
That was helpful.
It was. Brian, let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to one of the women behind the Washington Post's reliable source column, Ms. Roxanne Roberts, right there.
Hello.
Hello.
Next, it's an alumnus of Second City and Mad TV, actor, comedian, and writer Keegan Michael Key.
Hi, Brian.
Hey, Keegan.
How you doing?
Good.
Finally, a writer for HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, Mr. Adam Felber is here.
Hello.
Hi, Brian.
Lead me.
You're going to start us off in our traditional fashion with Who's Carl This Time. Carl Castle right here is going to recreate for you three quotations from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, you win our prize, Carl's voice, on your voicemail. Ready to go?
Ready to go.
Here we go. Your first quote is the White House prematurely congratulating itself earlier this week.
We took decisive action, and it's a good example of how to respond in this atmosphere.
That, from Tuesday morning, was a White House deputy chief of staff talking about the decisive, smart, wise move they made in quickly firing whom?
Shirley Sherrod.
Very good. Yeah, Shirley Sherrod. The once and possibly future Department of Agriculture employee. It used to be, if you wanted to serve in public life, you couldn't say anything even remotely controversial in public. Turns out that was the good old days. Now you can't say anything that can be falsely re-edited by partisan websites to mean the opposite of what you actually said. You recommend remaining silent from birth until you get your job in the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and then please conduct your work entirely in mime. So here's the good news out of this episode, this bizarre episode this week. The administration may be slow to fix things, but they screw them up real quick. They got rid of a blameless appointee because of a two-minute video cut from her 45-minute speech. They watched 2 minutes. They say, that's it. We get it. Turn it off. This explains why Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack thinks that The Wizard of Oz is a black-and-white film about a farm girl in Kansas.
Who dies in the storm.
Yeah. He didn't get that far.
Guy's got the fastest-moving Netflix queue in Washington. Yeah. Things get to go home every night.
Did you know, this is actually interesting, I didn't realize this, that they actually forced her resignation before Fox News said anything about it.
Really?
It was all anticipatory.
Oh. Really?
That's very proactive.
It is.
Yeah.
There you go.
Now if they could apply that kind of stuff to, I don't know, oil.
Yeah. All right, very good, Brian. Here is your next quote.
This is killing an ant with a nuclear weapon.
That now infamous quote from Minority Leader John Boehner was about a bill that President Obama finally signed into law this week. What law?
Financial overhaul.
Exactly, the financial regulatory reform. Well done. This week, the Obama administration took a break from the work they were elected to do, firing innocent bureaucrats because crazy people on the internet tell them to, and passed major financial reform. Now, since everybody was riveted by Lindsay Lohan going to jail and missed out the whole thing, we thought we'd tell you what the law will do. First, all Wall Street tycoons with incomes over $500,000 a year have to dress like Uncle Moneybags from the Monopoly game. Top hat, monocle, and spats.
Oh, it's about time.
It is. ATM fees will be based on the amount of money you have in your bank account. So if you're a hedge fund manager taking out $100, your fee is $13 million. And lastly, and perhaps most importantly, from now on, when conducting transactions that might eventually blow up the entire economy, bankers have to add the statement, "But on the other hand, what do I know?"
Killing an ant with a nuclear weapon.
That's what he said.
What was the last ant to destroy the world's economy?
Ant can't, but man, he had high hopes.
Oops, there goes another world economy.
All right, here is your last quote, and get ready. It's a tweet.
Peaceful Muslims, please repudiate.
So who told the peaceful Muslims to, quote, refudiate the planned mosque that's to be built near Ground Zero?
Sarah Palin.
Of course. Huge news this week from the woman who used to governiate in Alaska, Sarah Palin, can create new words with the power of her mind. She has to do that because she won't use a thesaurus. She says everybody knows they're extinct. Refudiate, which she modestly tried to erase in an update of the tweet, is the perfect word. It combines the meanings of refudi and eight. Although it turns out that people said, oh my gosh, she made up a word for the tweet. No, she had made it up years ago. It's the name she picked out for her son, Track, in case he turned out to be a girl.
Right.
Track or refudiate.
Refudiate, you know. Palin, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, I think you're being a little hard on the Bard of Wasilla.
Yeah, well, this is the thing.
She then compared herself to Shakespeare.
This is the thing. This is true. She compared, I mean, people said, you made up a word, Ms. Palin. She said, oh no, I made up a new word. Yes, Shakespeare made up words. She compared herself to Shakespeare. She has other things in common with Shakespeare. Shakespeare also quit his job inexplicably in the middle of it. And about half of America doesn't understand what the other half sees in him. So we have that in common. Carl, how did Brian do in our quiz?
Brian was perfect, Peter. Three correct answers. So, Brian, you win our prize.
Well done. Congratulations. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Adam, this week, new British Prime Minister David Cameron came to Washington for his first summit with President Obama. To demonstrate his government's commitment to austerity, Mr. Cameron decided to do what for this visit?
He walked here.
Close, actually.
He did something unusual
for heads of major industrialized nations.
He flew coach.
He flew commercial.
He flew commercial, yes.
Instead of Royal Air Force One or the Queen's own dirigible or whatever it is prime ministers usually use to get around, Cameron and his retinue flew across the pond on British Airways, although it was business class. This provided some wrinkles to the special relationship between our two countries. For example, the date of the summit had to be scheduled around the blackout dates in Cameron's frequent flyer program. And even so, the meeting began an hour late because once they landed, his airport shuttle had to stop at the Days Inn and the Marriott before they got to the White House.
You know, if Britain really does want to, you know, cut back a little bit, I mean, I like the idea of flying commercial, but how about, I don't know, there's some glaring little things like a monarchy.
You guys, the Queen is cutting back.
Okay. How is the Queen cutting back?
Is she downscaling?
She's downscaling. I think there are 1,400 servants, and they're not getting any raises. Mm, they're pay caps.
I don't know if you've dropped by Buckingham Trailer lately, but it's not what it was.
Instead of guards, they have a bug zap.
Everybody shows up to watch the changing of the nightlight. Right.
Adam, in an effort to get a lighter sentence, the New York man convicted of credit card fraud submitted to the court photos of himself doing good deeds, trying to improve the reputation of his character. It only ended up getting him in more trouble. Why?
He faked them.
Yes, he did. They were Photoshop fakes. With lots of gall and not much in the way of Photoshop skills, Daryl Simon gave the judge a stack of snapshots showing his good work. Some examples in one, he's helping a physical therapy patient. He's assisting a teen student in another. In another, he's providing comfort to a sickly patient in rehab. Prosecutors noticed, though, that Simon looked exactly the same in all of them. Like, exactly. He used a single photo of himself and pasted it over and over again into a bunch.
Here I am healing lepers.
Exactly. The judge said, I don't remember a guy in a plaid shirt and Dockers helping lift the flag at Iwo Jima.
That lady was so grateful, she kissed me right in the middle of Times Square.
Right, right.
See, here's the picture. That's me crossing the Delaware. Right up in the front of the boat.
In the same shirt.
Thank you so much. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello.
Hi, who's this?
Jody Gunn.
Hey, where are you calling from, Jody?
Hudson, Michigan.
Where's Hudson?
Kind of in the middle of nowhere.
And what do you do there other than pine to be somewhere else?
I'm a housekeeper.
Uh-huh, okay. So there is at least a house there, we know that. Because you're keeping it. Well, welcome to the show, Jody. Now, you're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Jody's topic?
Sure. You get everything at Amazon, but where's the food court? The Orange Julius.
These days, people do most of their shopping online. Groceries, shoes, DVDs, Russian wives. That means the shopping malls of the world have to find new ways of attracting business. This week, we read about a store offering something extra you can only get by going there in person. Our panelists are going to tell you three tales about retail fun that you can't get online. Choose the true story, you'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to play?
Yes.
Let's hear first from Roxanne Roberts.
Stressed, a mall in China has taken retail therapy to a whole new level. In what may be the greatest Chinese invention since fireworks, the Shangyang Mall has a venting store on the fourth floor where women and only women can run around smashing things. Wearing motorcycle helmets and gloves to prevent injury, women go into recreations of a living room and a bedroom where they're allowed to break anything for 1 minute. Actual secondhand dishes, TVs, cell phones. Manager Wang Jingyu blames the economy for all the women's stress, which means he's obviously never been married.
A special store in a mall in China where you get to go in and smash things to relieve your frustration. Your next story of a retail experience you can't get online comes from Keegan-Michael Key.
One benefit of shopping at an actual brick-and-mortar store is trying out the thing you want to buy. But what if you want to try out a music system for a baby that's still in your belly? Unless you're a kangaroo or one of those creatures from Aliens, that's impossible. Or, at least it was, until Maddie Bostick found an answer. Ever since we installed the womb simulator, sales of our prenatal music belts have gone through the roof. We can now give parents virtually the same auditory experience their child is having. They can hear the music exactly as the child is hearing it. Bostick owns the Stork Store, a high-end children's boutique and baby equipment store. Parents strip down to their skivvies and submerge themselves in a tank filled with a fluid that is a very close facsimile to amniotic fluid. The room is completely dark, and music is piped into the chamber via a high-tech surround system to give mom or dad the full effect. Bostick says that the inspiration came to her by way of some personal childhood embarrassment. It's important to test for the crispest sound quality on these products. My mother used an old hi-fi system, and I spent all of kindergarten singing, "Buff the Tragic Wagon, lived by a tree."
A womb simulator so you can really test out those in utero baby sound systems. And your last story about fun in the store comes from Adam Felber.
The English called them sedan chairs. In India, they were known as palanquins. But at Atlanta's Great Mall of the Southland this summer, if you want to be carried through the crowd on a litter borne by four strapping guys, you will be asking for a shopulux. Yes, for $40 an hour, you can be retail's answer to Cleopatra in a privacy-curtained, video-equipped mobile tent carried by four uniformed, well, starving high school kids. Quote, it turns the entire mall into a sort of drive-through, says Shopulux founder Ronnie Burnett. Plus, it's fun. A steering console sends messages to the carrier captain, so you need only part the curtains to call to an intriguing face in the crowd, bestow mercy on a commoner, or, more likely, reach for a sour cream and onion Wetzel pretzel. The surprisingly successful Shopulux has a maximum seating capacity of 2 and a maximum cargo capacity of 500 pounds, but its ego capacity appears to be unlimited.
Well, let's review. Let's review these choices. From Roxanne Roberts, the story of a mall in China that allows frustrated female shoppers a chance to smash things with bats. From Keegan-Michael Key, a store where you can actually get into an artificial womb just to test those womb music systems you're thinking of buying. Or from Adam Felber, a mall where you can rent a good old-fashioned palanquin known as the Shopulux. Which of these is the real story of a luxury you can only get by going down to the actual store?
I think the second one.
You think the second one? Keegan-Michael Key's story of the womb simulator?
Yes, sir.
Have you ever had any experience with any of those musical systems for pregnant ladies?
No.
No. Okay. Your choice is then Keegan's story? Well, we spoke actually to a manager at a very prominent mall to get his opinion on this feature.
The frustration venting store in China is a very interesting concept, one that we've never tried at Mall of America, but who knows about the future?
Who knows indeed? That was Dan Jasper. He is a spokesman for the Mall of America in Minnesota. As you no doubt have figured out, he was talking about Roxanne's story, which turns out to be the real one, the frustration venting store in China. So I'm sorry you did not win, but you did earn a point for Keegan for picking his slightly disgusting story of the womb simulator.
Disgusting.
So thank you for that. And thanks for playing with us.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. We're S-H-O-P-P-I-N-G. We're shopping. We're S-H-O-P-P-I-N-G. We're shopping. And now the game where we invite people on who are really, really good at one thing in order to do something else. The Hold Steady has been rocking the bars of Brooklyn for 10 years, meaning their audience likes their music loud, their lyrics complex and smart, and their beer cheap and ironic. So everybody put on your skinny jeans and grab a PBR, or perhaps a Rolling Rock, because we are delighted to welcome the lead singer of the Hold Steady to our show, Craig Finn. Welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So one thing we hear about you guys is that you are a great bar band, quote unquote. What exactly does that mean?
Well, it's something actually I put in our first press release. And I think what it meant to me was that we don't, you know, change clothes to go on stage. We just wear what we were wearing that day. And it's more about entertainment than smoke and mirrors or anything. I think we just get up and play and put our hearts into it.
So you guys started out in bars. I mean, you have to get people's attention, though. They're loud and sometimes obnoxious places.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, there's volume. But, I mean, I guess that in some way that's testament to how well you're playing is where you can get them looking your way, from the bar.
Hey, before we go on any further, let's play a little music for the audience in case they haven't heard it. This is from the Hold Steady's new record. It's called Our Whole Lives. The kids are ripping in the sugar packets. The town is taking off their tavern jackets. I'm in the pew sticking bills in the basket. Praying that they're cool when I come pick up the package. Tonight we're going to have a really good time. But I want to go to heaven on the day I die. Just track it, the 5:30 mass early Saturday night. Ring, 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 goes the telephone. Tell my little lamb, said I'm on my way home. Now, one of the things I want to point out is that you are known for your lyrics, which are pretty complex and poetic and rhyming and clever with a lot of references. That is not typical sort of pop music kind of lyrical work. We're far beyond, you know, she loves you, yeah, yeah, yeah. Do you ever have anybody, like, in the audience raise their hand and go, could you stop and go back again? I missed that reference.
Well, I think that I have seen footnoted lyric sheets come up on the Internet.
So, really?
we're not too far away. But I think that, you know, I think that one of the things we'd like to do is make great rock music for smarter people. So I think that that's our intent.
Right. So it's great. So, like, 90% of your audience is rocking out and 10% are annotating you. I think that's...
While pumping their fists.
Of course, yes. You guys, originally, all of you in the band are from Minnesota, but you formed your band in Brooklyn.
Yeah, well, most of us had lived in Minneapolis, and two of us are actually from Minneapolis. But I ended up here and wanted to form a band, and I kind of, quickest way to figure out who was going to be good were people I'd already seen play, and a lot of those were transplanted Midwesterners.
Really? So it wasn't like you were all hanging out in a particular bar in Brooklyn where Minnesota people go to eat cheese curds and drink...
It was a Vikings party.
A Vikings party, for sure.
I've been to that place. That's on Fifth Avenue.
Yeah. your songs are so often about Minneapolis, which I loved. I mean, is there such a thing as like a Minnesota vibe? Is there a Minnesota nice rock and roll?
Well, I mean, there's certainly a great musical history out of Minneapolis with Prince and the Replacements and Bob Dylan and Husker Du. But more than that, I think when I write lyrics, I'm just still not comfortable writing as a New Yorker. I feel like Lou Reed does that very well, and I just feel like a poser trying to write a song about New York.
So you're living in New York, and you're writing these songs, and your songs are known for their kind of narrative arc, your stories, you have characters who recur, you're telling these stories about Minnesotans. You realize that you've become a kind of younger, hipper Garrison Keillor, don't you?
I'm just glad I'm hipper.
Yeah.
Although, if you've ever seen Garrison stage dive, it's something,
yeah, it's
something to behold.
You are a great lead singer and a great songwriter, and your band is a fantastic rock band. I will say, though, I watched some of your videos this week, and I've seen some of your appearances on TV, and I hope you take this the right way. You do not look like what most people think of when they think of, like, lead singer in a great rock band. Would you agree?
You know, my dentist just told me that today.
Really?
Yeah.
What did your dentist say?
She said, you do not look... She was actually maybe an assistant or a dental hygienist. She was,
yeah,
Russian, and she said, you do not look like you can rock and roll.
That sounds to me like a challenge, actually, the way that she put it. But what did you say to her?
I didn't know what to say, so... You know, oftentimes when we go somewhere, the bus driver on the tour bus after a few weeks confesses that at first he thought I was the manager.
Really? At least he didn't think you were the accountant. It could have been worse. I want to ask you a little bit about your lyrics before we go into the game, because as I said, we've studied your lyrics, and there are themes that come up again and again. One of them, Ybor City, Florida.
Yeah.
What is it with Ybor City? Are you being paid by their Chamber of Commerce? What?
You know, when it started, I really liked the way it was spelled, and I liked saying it. Ybor, it's Y-B-O-R. That's cool, like, right? You know,
yeah.
Like, so I just got really into putting it in songs, so I got to say it. And then we went and played there, and then it became kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, because once we had a couple songs about it, all our fans wanted to show up when we played in Ybor City as if,
right,
it was some sort of mecca.
Oh, really? So it became, like, to go see the whole steady in Ybor City would be like seeing Frank Sinatra at Caesar's Palace.
This is, I guess, yeah.
This is the place. We asked our Twitter followers, who follow us at Twitter/WaitWait, if they had a question for you, and one that they wanted us to ask was, do you ever get mistaken for a math teacher?
I think I probably get mistaken for a lot of things. The Verizon guy sometimes comes up, you know? Can you hear me now?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You know, you do look a little bit like him. Have you ever started a concert going, hey, Detroit, can you hear me now?
No, but I might now.
You would blow their minds. Well, Craig Finn, we love your music, and we're delighted to talk to you. And we have invited you here to play a game we're calling...
You're going to spend 3 weeks inside an airtight closet with two other guys. Good luck.
Actually sounds like a tour, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But no, what we're talking about is the fact that this week marked the 41st anniversary of the first moon landing back in 1969. So we thought we'd ask you not about that achievement per se, but about what went into getting there, using Mary Roach's wonderful new book, Packing for Mars. We are going to ask you three questions about the research that went into the first space flights. Get two right, you'll win our prize. One of our listeners, Carl's voice on the home answering machine. Carl, who is Craig Finn playing for?
Craig is playing for Natasha Laney of Sarasota, Florida.
All right, ready to play, Craig?
Yeah, ready.
Here's your first question. The first research into what would happen to living creatures sent into the sky goes back a surprisingly long way. Which of these was one of the first such experiments? A, Russian scientists working for Tsar Peter the Great shot some monkeys out of a cannon. B, the Montgolfier brothers, balloon pioneers, sent a duck, a sheep, and a rooster up in a balloon to see what would happen to them. Or C, rocket pioneer Robert Goddard used to take his dog on walks to the top of mountains just to see how it behaved up there.
Number two.
You know, for the Montgolfier brothers sending animals up in their balloon?
Yes. Yeah.
You're right. That's exactly what they did. You see, nobody had ever been up that high before. They didn't know what would happen up to 2,000 feet. So they tested it first on a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. The animals were fine when they came back down, although the sheep soiled the basket. As you might expect.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Now we have to get another basket.
Yeah. All right, next question. Once the space program began in earnest in this country, a lot of testing went into finding out what would happen when you put people in the spacecraft and sent them into the stars, including a research program specifically into the effects on astronauts of what? A, extreme body odor. B, having an annoying voice constantly in your ear. Or C, having to spend a week strapped next to somebody who you cannot stand.
A.
You're going for A, the body odor.
Yeah.
You're right. That's why you should be confident. Researchers put test subjects in a chamber for weeks, wouldn't let them change their clothes or wash. They discovered that BO gets worse and worse for about 5 to 8 days. Then the human nose just kind of shorts out and stops noticing it. It's a survival instinct. All right, this is very good. Let's see how well you do with the last one. When the Russians put the first man in space up on their ship, Yuri Gagarin, they took an extra precaution because they, again, didn't know what would happen. What was their precaution? A, they gave him a handgun in case he was attacked by aliens. B, they locked the controls in case he went insane. Or C, they gave him an Aeroflot air sickness bag just in case.
I'm saying B.
You know they locked the controls?
Yeah.
That's exactly what they did.
Yeah.
They did not know, since it had never been done before, what would happen if you sent a guy that high in the air, so they locked the controls, so if he lost his mind, he couldn't ruin everything.
The Russians wouldn't put an individual first.
No, they wouldn't do that.
I love that the Russians just kind of assumed that there might be some condition known as the space crazies.
So, Carl, how did Craig Finn do in our quiz?
Craig had three correct answers, Peter, so he wins for Natasha Laney. Congratulations.
Yeah. Well done.
Thank you.
Hey, before we go, one thing we noticed when you were when we were watching you on videos and some of your concert footage, you gesticulate a lot when you sing. You're not one of those guys who just grabs the mic and stays there. You're leaping around a lot and gesticulating. Is that something you practice, or is that natural?
No, it's natural. It's more about turning something off in your brain that would allow you to not want to look like a fool.
Oh, really? So whatever that anti-fool governor mechanism in your brain is, you just turn it off. And
clip it, yeah.
Craig Finn is the lead singer of The Hold Steady. Their new album, Heaven Is Whenever, is fantastic, and it is out now. Get it wherever you get your music. Craig Finn, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Great. Thank you, Carl. Thank you so much. Thank you, everybody. In just a minute, Carl will announce his decision to leave NPR and join the NBA to play with LeBron James. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT.
We spent a lot of time on that.
This is a thing now.
Well, you know, we do have a week between shows. What do you think we do with the time? Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Roxanne, the Boulder City Council encourages debate and citizen involvement, of course, but recent incidents have led the council to consider a ban on what?
Addressing the council wearing only underwear.
Exactly correct. That's the rule. Because, you know, People know they need to wear pants to city council meetings, right? They shouldn't need a rule. They need a rule.
He was wearing boxers.
He was. Recently in Boulder, as you say, a man stepped up to the podium wearing nothing but boxers, and in the words of one journalist who witnessed the horrifying affair, quote, stroking his hairy chest, unquote. You know, if somebody sees you, this is just a word to the wise, ladies and gentlemen, if someone sees you with your shirt off and then makes a law banning the removal of shirts, it might be time for a chest wax. Just saying.
In his defense, he was picturing everybody else there naked.
He was. If the ban succeeds, it will most likely put an end to the well-attended erogenous zoning debates at the... Yeah. Roxanne, do you know why he did this? Because we could not quite figure it out, what his reason was for standing up there wearing nothing but boxers addressing the Boulder.
I do not. I'm assuming he was running late.
Yes. You know how it is.
It happens.
You get out of the shower, you look at your watch, like, oh, hell.
Right.
The city council meeting public comment session starts. I'll just run out in my boxers.
And it's kind of casual.
Right.
And actually, if you really want to get into this, what's the difference between a colorful pair of boxers and a swimsuit or a pair of shorts?
One is underwear.
Yes.
I think it's proof that the city hall security guards in Boulder are bored.
Pretty lax.
Yeah. Yeah, they're bored.
Pretty, yeah.
Sir, we're going to have to ask you to remove those.
Well, you know what?
Never and that. And that. Yes, and that. Okay, go on in.
I'm here to complain about the security guards in the front of the building.
They've confiscated
my also, clothing. I'd like to say it's cold in here. Keegan, 3 months ago, the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office created a new trademark office for entrepreneurs, specific entrepreneurs in a specific business, and then they promptly shut it down. So what can you no longer trademark?
Is it something to do with the internet?
No, it's not something internet. In fact, it's something that's only available in mostly California, a few other states these days.
Marijuana,
indeed.
Yes.
For 3 months, growers and dealers of medical marijuana were allowed to seek trademarks for names like Maui Wowie, Chronic, Purple Totenberg.
Oh, the Purple Totenberg.
That
oh,
stuff will mess you
that's
up.
That's the good stuff.
Yeah. You take that stuff, all of a sudden you're talking in different voices.
Exactly.
It's crazy.
If you're just starting, just take the sky blue Totenberg.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or the mauve Totenberg.
But now it's all over. It turns out somebody in the patent office realized that selling marijuana is still a federal crime. So maybe the federal government shouldn't allow you to trademark your illegal product.
Good dude, thing, though, bad news about our new office.
But during...
We totally didn't think this one through.
I guess not.
Too much Purple Totenberg.
Yeah, apparently. The patent office was just overrun with confused potheads submitting patents, not for their pot, but for ideas they'd had while using it. For example, patent for method of just like thinking of a food, and then you can taste the food, and all you had to do was think of the food.
TM.
And then there was this idea that came in, it was like in a patent form. It was like, did anyone ever patent getting a patent? Because then anytime somebody gets a patent, you get money. But then when I get the patent for patenting patents, do I just have to give the money to myself? Whoa.
That must have been a short-lived but really fun office.
It must have been great.
Yeah, absolutely.
I am here to patent toes.
Look at them.
Look at those. Everybody has them. Yep. I own them.
Adam, two prisoners easily escaped from a jail in Argentina this week. According to the BBC, there was a problem with one of the guards. What was it?
He was made of cardboard.
So close.
He was a mannequin.
You know what?
He was a fake guard.
Castaway.
He was a fake
away.
Guard.
He was a volleyball.
He's close enough.
Soccer ball.
He was a soccer ball.
The guard yeah. was a football wearing a prison officer's cap. Yeah. Staffing and
but he put in 20 good years.
Yeah. Staffing and budget cuts meant that only 2 of the 15 prison guard towers were staffed with humans. And even though security cameras captured the entire escape, the sporting goods over in Tower 3 did nothing to stop it.
Wow. I'm moving to Argentina right now and committing
a whole bunch of crimes.
The incident has ended the ball's otherwise exemplary career in corrections. And he left, and he said, the football said, you won't have me to kick around anymore.
Oh, wow. Oh, man.
Yeah, that's got the makings of the worst buddy cop movie ever. Here's your new partner. I work alone. Right. Yes, apparently, I still do. I've got his soccer ball.
Yeah, no, go get him. Just chuck him at the bad guys. You know.
He's a by-the-book cop 2 weeks from retirement. So he's a football. Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924, or you can click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Jane DeLugas from Franklin, Pennsylvania.
Hey, how are things in Franklin, Pennsylvania?
Oh, it's beautiful. It's gorgeous.
Really?
Yeah.
What do you do there?
I am a second grade teacher.
Oh, my goodness. And you sound like you have just the level of enthusiasm necessary to survive that.
Well, it's I just finished my second year, so, I haven't been burned out yet.
I've known some second graders. They'll wear you down. Well, welcome to the show, Jane. Carl Castle right here is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on two of the limericks, you'll be a winner. Ready to go?
Yes, sir.
Here is your first limerick.
Don't be slimy and limp like a bland snake, or crumbly and dry like a sand cake. Be firm, look in eye, then calmly say hi. Now that's how you give a good...
handshake?
Right. The secret to a good handshake isn't confidence or a firm grip. It's a complex mathematical algorithm. And now a University of Manchester scientist has finally solved it. You need, quote, a complete grip and firm squeeze and cool and dry palm, approximately 3 shakes with a medium level of vigor, held for no longer than 3 seconds with eye contact kept throughout and a good natural smile with a slow offset with, of course, an appropriate accompanying verbal statement, unquote. We'd tell you about his formula for a high five, but I'd need a blackboard. Here is your next limerick.
My cube is right next to a jerk. No wonder my duties I shirk. My place of employ has no room for joy. I hate all the people at...
work.
Right. Have you ever looked around at work, at your place of employment, and thought, wow, I hate these people? Well, good news, they very likely hate you back. According to a recent survey of British workers, 1 in 10 admitted to loathing their coworkers, which means at least 10% of the people you work with hate you. In addition to harboring rage, disgust, and repulsion, many even admitted to, quote, being deliberately unhelpful to a manager or colleague.
Being deliberately unhelpful to a manager or colleague.
Carl, did you say something?
Nope, nothing.
Okay.
No.
I thought I...
No.
Okay, never mind. No. Here is your last limerick.
Tulips, that bubble was so-so. And housing, I fear, is a no-no. But for chocolated treats, the market stays sweet. I've cornered the market for...
ho-hos?
Ho-hos.
What?
It's an ingredient in ho-hos.
Cocoa.
Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome. This week, a mysterious London hedge fund bought up an enormous part of the world's cocoa stocks, roughly 240,000 tons of beans worth close to $1 billion. And unusually, instead of just claiming ownership of the beans on ships or wherever they are, he actually had them delivered to his own warehouse. The deal's perfectly legal. It has sent prices soaring to a 33-year-old high. Not much is known about the buyer, a Mr. William Wonka.
It really does kind of feel like a James Bondy kind of thing,
yes.
Doesn't it? Like all that cocoa was sent to a cave under a volcano.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Mr. Bond, the mission is to defy what's happening to the world's cocoa supply. You'll be posing as a fat person who would like some chocolate. Carl, how did Jane do in our quiz?
Jane had 3 correct answers, Peter. So, Jane, I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine or voicemail.
Well done, Jane.
Outstanding. Thank you.
Terrific.
Gauntlet Rain.
Now onto our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill in the blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. Adam Felber, Roxanne Roberts, and Keegan-Michael Key each has 3 points.
So we've randomly selected an order. Roxanne, you're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. The Senate Judiciary Committee voted to confirm blank to the Supreme Court.
Elena Kagan.
Right. On Thursday, President Obama signed legislation extending blank benefits.
Unemployment.
Right. On Wednesday, Hillary Clinton announced that the U.S. will place new sanctions on blank.
Let's see. We're helping Pakistan. We're helping Afghanistan. North Korea.
Yes. Researchers announced that they had developed a new gel that drastically reduces the transmission of blank to women. Yes, AIDS, HIV. The city of Elmhurst, Illinois, is considering charging a woman with disorderly conduct after she repeatedly blanked at a public meeting.
Is this the one that broke out into song?
No. She rolled her eyes. On Thursday, a federal judge in Connecticut ruled that competitive blanking is not a sport under Title IX.
Cheerleading.
Yes, totally unfair. French vanilla and superfudge truffle were among the 5 ice cream flavors officially retired by blank.
Baskin-Robbins.
Right. A clerk at a thrift store in Idaho got in trouble this week when she accidentally blanked.
She locked herself in the...
Yes.
Ice cream freezer.
No. She got into trouble when she sold her boss's laptop for $5.
Oh. That was, wait. It was a thrift shop.
I said that.
You didn't say thrift shop.
I said thrift store.
You said thrift store.
I did.
He did.
I thought, I heard convenience store.
No,
I knew that,
store.
Too.
Thrift store. Well, you didn't get okay. It's a people hours. It's like in the thrift store. It's a busy day. You're selling all kinds of things. And like, here's some old T-shirts and some broken toys. And here's a brand new computer. What do you say? I'll give you the whole lot for $10.
But the guy returned it.
He did. I did not know that.
Yes, he returned it.
So I get half a point.
Well, that's good. No.
6.5.
It's good. I mean, the manager was upset. But points. They got it. As we finally got it back. He was going to call the police, but the phone was mysteriously missing. Carl, how did Roxanne do in our quiz?
Roxanne had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. She now has 15 points, and Roxanne has the lead.
Well done, as always, Roxanne.
Yeah. You too.
Keegan, you're up next. Fill in the blank. BP announced that even though tropical depressions are headed for the Gulf of Mexico, it will keep the cap on the blank.
On the oil rig.
Right. On Thursday, a judge heard 2 lawsuits seeking to block the implementation of Arizona's new blank law.
Immigration.
Right. Although he repeatedly swore he would testify in his own defense. Blank announced Wednesday that, oh no, he would not.
Rod Blagojevich.
Right. 5 states filed a lawsuit seeking action to stop the blank from invading the Great Lakes.
The oil. I don't know.
No, the Asian carp. The Asian carp.
Well, yeah, that was the second thing I was going to say, the Asian carp.
A man and woman having an affair in Germany were discovered in the middle of their tryst when they blanked.
We're smoking purple tubes.
No. When they fell naked out of a window and onto the street below.
Oh, jeez.
This week Amazon announced that it was selling more blanks than hardcovers.
The e-books.
Right. Spirit Airlines defended its new fee policy, telling Congress that bringing blank on vacation was, quote, not essential.
Your luggage.
Right. The Catholic Archdiocese of Austria reprimanded a priest who tried auctioning off his confessional booth for use as a blank.
For use as a prostitution.
No.
Thing. No.
For use as a sauna.
A sauna.
You know, while describing all the awful things you've done, you're roasting in a tiny little hell simulator.
This is like in Austria?
This is in Austria.
Austria.
That is one passive-aggressive priest.
Yeah, I know.
That's his way of letting the diocese know that it's really hot in there and he deserves a better confession.
Right, right.
Carl, how did Keegan do in our quiz?
Keegan had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 13. Roxanne still has the lead with 15 points.
All right. So how many, then, does Adam need to win?
6 to tie, 7 to win outright.
All right, Adam, this is for the game. British Prime Minister David Cameron said he would not stage an inquiry into the blank bomber's release from prison.
The Lockerbie bomber.
Right. On Tuesday, actress blank began her jail sentence in California.
Lindsay Lohan.
Right. The House Ethics Panel announced it was filing charges against senior New York Democrat blank.
Charlie Rangel.
Right. On Saturday, the first ever blank opened for business in Regent's Park in England.
Internet ice cream store.
So close. It's actually an ice cream truck for dogs.
Oh, wow. Oh,
archaeologists in southern England announced that they had discovered a second version of blank made of wood.
Stonehenge.
Right. Mark Zuckerberg denied he signed away 84% of the social networking site blank in 2004.
Facebook.
Right. Police in Lyon, New York arrested a 17-year-old on a number of charges after he blanked.
Exploded.
No. Led them on a mile-long Amish buggy chase.
I did know that one.
Police saw Levy Detweiler blow through the stop sign in his horse-drawn buggy. The chase was on. Oh. Detweiler eluded the cops at speeds in the high teens until this horse got cold feet and ditched the teen in buggy, forcing Detweiler to run away on foot. Police say they weren't surprised. Detweiler first caught their eye when they noticed the flame detailing on the sides of his horse. Carl, did Adam do well enough to take this game?
He needed 6 to tie, but Adam had just 5 correct answers. So with 15 points, Roxanne Roberts is this week's champion.
Well done. In just a minute, we'll ask our panelists to predict what would be the next shocking tape to rock Washington. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the National Association of Realtors, providing information for those buying or selling their homes at houselogic.com/buy and sell. New Orleans Convention and Visitors Bureau with information on the food, music, and culture of New Orleans at neworleansinfo.com. And Subaru, where all vehicles are built in zero landfill plants. Love, it's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. Wait, don't tell me. Is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Godica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our intern is Siri Belusu. Our web guru, now digital producer, is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Dolarchik and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac right here at Chase Bank. And congratulations this week to Cody Roach, the winner of this week's Name That Crime contest on our blog. Check it out at npr.org/wait. B.J. Liederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillock, Eva Walchover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Snowcap Danforth. Now, panel, what will be the next tape to rock the Capitol with its release? Roxanne Roberts.
An unedited video of Laura Bush submitting her patent for Crawford Gold.
Keegan-Michael Key.
A scandalous home video shot by Michelle Obama of Malia beating the president at horse.
And Adam Felber.
Your ears will melt when you hear the playoff of profanity, the Super Bowl of swearing. It's the Rahm Emanuel versus Mel Gibson shower showdown. Cage match. Woo-hoo.
If any of those tapes appear, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carol Castle. Thanks also to Keegan-Michael Key, Roxanne Roberts, and Adam Felber. I am Peter Sagal. Thank you all for listening. We will see you next week.
This is NPR.